is WFG Insights, your download on the real estate market, featuring industry experts, thought leadership, and what's trending, keeping you informed and ahead of the market. In this episode, WFG Chairman and Founder Patrick Stone offers an optimistic outlook on interest rates, but he warns the lack of housing inventory will continue to be an issue for some time. Well, Patrick, good to see you. It's been a while, and thank you again for joining us here. Let's start with the macro here. Talk world economy, because we haven't done that in a while. We've had the Russia-Ukraine war going on over a year now. China, of course, taking sides now with Russia. It is a global economy, as you pointed out many times. What should we be concerned about here moving forward?
Well, I do think there will be a global recession. And, inflation is extraordinarily high in Europe and staying fairly high because of the Ukraine war. A lot of goods that were being bought out of China have now, as a source, the sources have gone elsewhere. So China's got a little bit steeper uphill climb to get reengaged. I do think that we will rely on more companies and more different sources than we have in the past. I do think there'll be a global recession. I do think we will benefit from it, candidly, because we have an extraordinary amount of disposable income in this country, both in the individuals, about $900 billion more in individuals than we had prior to the pandemic, and about $5 trillion more in corporations and investors. So any global slowdown will present acquisition opportunities and investment opportunities for American companies. So I don't like to see recessions, but I think there'll be a global recession. I do think there's a good chance we'll have one in the U.S. now, but it'll be fairly light and won't last very long. I just think the banking crisis exacerbated the problems and probably tipped us over the edge. So we are probably looking at a small short-term recession in the U.S. later this year or early next year.
I'll circle back to you on that in just a sec, too, because I had another question on that. But I want to talk about, you know, OPEC and their production cut. I guess this is good news if you're in Texas, maybe not so good at the gas pump. Is this going to impact inflation at all? And does this weigh on the economy at all?
And to a small degree. You notice that the West Texas Intermediate popped up a little bit and then backed up, and it's still right around $82, $83 a barrel. So I don't think it's had as big an impact as people worried, in part because there is more diverse sources of oil now. There's more small companies in a lot of different places exporting oil. OPEC had the world market by the throat back in the 70s, as you remember, but not so much anymore. So a small impact, but I don't think horribly damaging or long term.
Good to hear. Now, you alluded to Silicon Valley Bank, Signature, the failures there. What's the overall impact on the economy here? Obviously, this is not a good thing. Let's talk about maybe a couple questions here. What's the impact on bank lending moving forward in general, and especially regional banks and smaller banks who typically are the ones who back builders, right? And that's, you know, the big banks as well in some cases. But what's the impact of this in the banking industry here moving forward?
Well, I think in general terms, it has caused a tilt towards being more conservative. Banks are a little bit, they've tightened their lending standards a little bit. They're being a little bit more reticent to engage in anything that looks speculative. So banks are being more careful. Consequently, money is tighter. So, well, I think it is really the event that will tip us over into a short-term recession. Does it impact real estate? Interestingly enough, it probably impacts low-end commercial more than anything else, because a lot of low-end commercial, small multifamily, regional or local development, like small subdivisions, so forth, are basically sponsored and funded by small to medium-sized banks. So it will impact that part of the market. Do I think it's a devastating long-term thing? No. I think it got overblown a little bit, but it did tilt the lending industry to a more conservative stance.
And I want to make sure we connect the dots here for our audience. How does this issue with these banks tip us into a recession? Is it the tightening of credit? Is that what does it?
Tightening of credit, yes. And, we've seen basically Hiring slow way down. We have seen investment slow down, tightening of credit. So basically, yeah, it just adds another item to the pile of things that cause caution, uncertainty, and slowdown.
Yeah. Okay. We've heard about the recession. You talked about this again off the top, and I wanted to ask those two questions before I ask this one to kind of tee this up. We've been hearing about this for a long time now. I think it's been, 2 years now. We've been hearing about this recession and hearing about it and hearing about it. This has to be the slowest, movement into a recession in my lifetime. All that said, it doesn't feel like it's going to be too severe, or does that depend what sector you're in?
No, I don't think it'll be very severe at all. And just for the record, what started the conversation about recession was the inversion of the 10-year and 2-year T-bills. When you start getting a higher rate on a shorter term instrument, that causes concern. That means things are upside down. And candidly, the recession, if it happened today, would be about the right time length between the inversion on the T-bills and the actual recession happening. I don't think the recession will happen for another 3 to 6 months because, again, as I mentioned earlier, because of the pandemic, the generosity of the government, plus people having less ability to spend money on services, the American consumer has $900 billion more disposable income than they had at the beginning of the pandemic, and investors and corporations have more money. So that has created a different counterbalance, if you will, to the recession pressures. I still think it'll happen, but I don't think it'll be very egregious at all.
That's good to hear. Back to inflation, we got some good news with the producer price index numbers. We're down 0.5% in March, and I know you had forecast this not long ago, so not surprising to our audience here that this is happening. But translate that to what that means on Main Street in terms of, prices across the board. How much longer, how much of a trail is there between the time you see producer prices start to cool off and the time that, consumers will see this on Main Street?
Yeah, I think, you got to look at all of it. I don't think you can pick one thing out like just producer prices. You see the CPI index, the PCE index, producer prices, they're trending down. Now, the positive impact of that is it starts to eliminate profit inflation. By profit inflation, I mean where corporations raise prices because they can and make more money. Once you have inflation get embedded and have a little bit of a runway, corporations tend to take advantage of that. Everybody does. They raise their prices because they can, So there's price pressures because of supply chain and other issues, but profit inflation starts creeping in. What's going on now with the dropping rates of inflation on those three indexes will cause the profit inflation to stop or to slow way down. So it really, I think you're going to see inflation decline very significantly over the next 6 months. Will we be back to 2%? Probably take about a year, year and a half to get down under 3. But, we're getting there and people get more positive about the direction and people get more rational in their behavior.
So does that mean that the 20-pound bag of dog food that was $45 that's now a 16-pound bag of dog food for $55 will go back to being a 20-pound bag of dog food for $45?
I don't know that it'll go backwards, but it'll stop going up.
Okay.
We don't see prices go down very often for any reason, right?
Yeah.
But they quit going up, we can adjust to it.
I know that, pet food's probably out of your, expertise, but I just thought I'd throw that out there.
I have two dogs and a cat, so I spend a lot of money on pet food.
That's true. You do. Yeah. I want to talk about interest rates, too. Inflation cooling off, obviously good news for interest rates overall. We've talked about that quite a bit. Where are we at now on a 30-year fixed as of today, as we record this on April 13th, and our audience listens to it or watches it throughout the next couple of weeks? Where are we on that 30-year fixed, and where do you see it going the next, 6 to 9 months?
Well, a real interesting thing is happening, and we talked about this before, and that is that the relationship between the 30-year fixed and the 10-year T-bill got broke about a year ago. Hmm. And the relationship I'm talking about is historically a 30-year fixed has run 1.5 to 2 points above the 10-year T-bill. Right now, it's almost exactly 3 points higher than the 10-year T-bill. And, this morning, I think the last time I looked, we were roughly about 3.4 or something like that on the 10-year T-bill, and the 30-year fix is about 6.3. So I think you still haven't seen a reduction in mortgage rates because of inflation declining, but I think you will start to see that. I think you will start to see a decline in mortgage rates. T-bill, you know, if T-bill stayed right where it was and we readjusted to more of a normal market, you'd be at about, you know, about 4.8 to 5.4 mortgage rates, which would be phenomenal. But I don't know that we're going to get there very quickly, but we will start to see a movement in that direction.
That's good to hear. So lower rates will obviously help the housing market in general and everybody. Yeah. But we still have a serious housing inventory problem.
Yes, we do.
Well documented here on this show. I don't see listing prices moving a whole lot in our neighborhood. We ran a CMA yesterday. I do see a difference in, you know, list price to close price of anywhere from 7 to 15%. So it looks like there's a little bit of wiggle room. I don't want to say leverage or negotiating power or anything like that, because we're not, I don't think we're quite there yet. But there does seem to be a little bit of wiggle room on, you know, listing price from, you know, what it is listed to close. Are you seeing the same thing?
Yeah, we're seeing a more normal, if you will, a more normal relationship between listing price and closing prices. And that is that you do have, you know, maybe up to a third of them get discounted to some degree, but not terribly. That's a more normal market. We kind of lost that altogether there for a couple of years. And so we are getting back to more normal market. And it's interesting to me how much the whole mortgage rate issue, if I can just wander afield here for a second.
Please do.
I was given a speech in Phoenix last week, and I showed a slide. Everybody's worried about how high mortgage rates are. And I showed a slide of mortgage rates, 30-year fixed, going back to 1970. The first time 30-year fixed rate mortgage was under 7% from 1970 was 2003. So there were 33 years there in which the mortgage rate was above 7%. You know, it was actually 7.5 for most of that, or higher, up to 15 or 16. So we do see the mortgage rates coming down a little bit. And if you got mortgage rates down to 5%, that allows about 1.5 million people to get back into the market. So it makes a huge difference in the demand. People have talked to me a lot about how can housing prices not crash because demand has slipped so far. Well, so has supply. There's only one third as many homes on the market as there was back in 2016. I mean, you know, so supply has dropped almost commensurate with demand in most markets. And, you know, so we see mortgage rates come down, we'll engage more. Another statistic that's kind of interesting there is at about 6.3% mortgage, 31% of all purchases are first-time home buyers. At 7.25, 1% more, only 26% were first-time home buyers. So it really brings a lot of people into the market if you get your mortgage rates down under 6.
So a couple follow-ups to that then, maybe a good news, not so good news. First, the good news is in spite of quite a few layoffs in the tech industry and some pain, you know, obviously in the real estate market, generally the job market is fairly strong. And as I always said, as long as people have jobs and job security, whether rates are 5, 6, 7%, they will buy a home. It might be a little smaller home, it might be a little bigger home, depending on when they buy. But that's a correct statement, right? I mean, we've got a pretty solid job market, so that's good news, right?
Well, yeah, you know, and it comes down to affordability. Obviously, a lot of young people who, as I just pointed out, are like up to a third of all purchases in a good market. You know, that's where it gets impacted the most because they don't have the down payment or the ability to get a mortgage that they can live with, right? So we need to see mortgage rates come a little bit downward so we can get the first time buyer back in the game. But we do have good employment, and I think the worst projection I've seen is that if we do have a recession, maybe employment gets up to 4.7%. I mean, you know, we're at 3.5. I mean, that's you know, people do lose their job, but that is a horrific change.
Yeah. The other follow-up I have is the interest rate piece, where mortgage interest rates, 30-year fix, were down around 3 to 3.5%, and this is well documented. We've talked about this, but I want to revisit this because you've got a lot of people who bought homes at a low interest rate, and I know that there will be reasons people are forced to move or to abandon that, whether it's relocation, family issues, divorce, etc. All of that aside, how big of an impact is it that you have a large portion of the people out there who are in homes right now at a low interest rate, and they're not going to give that up as, you know, unless they have to? How does that kind of like a double whammy impact inventory?
let's be honest, actually measuring that impact's a little difficult, but it obviously has some impact because people are in very affordable situation. And I think I saw an estimate the other day that 90% of all mortgages were under 4%.
Yeah.
So that does, that gives some people something to think about when they consider moving, right? Is it a barrier? It may be, but I think one thing you've seen, and this is sort of an interesting, and pardon me for speculating a little bit, but this is sort of an interesting phenomena. We've had a lot of movement over the last couple of years to places like Arizona, Texas, Florida, so forth and so on. And, I think that's slowing down because historically the amount of moves by the American population has gone down dramatically in the last 40 years. I think back in 1980, it was like 18% of the population moved annually. Now it's right prior to the pandemic, it was down under 9%. So we've had a change socially, but people have moved recently because of the difference in prices of homes. Just give you an example. If you divide the U.S. into four categories, Northeast, Midwest, South, and West, the West right now, your medium-priced home is about $550,000. In the Midwest, it's $263,000. So if you have flexibility to move in the South, it's $347,000. So if you're sitting somewhere on the West Coast and you have a $550,000 home, you can move to the South or Midwest and even get a better home and have lower payment, even at the current mortgage rates.
Well, I can tell you, Pat, we don't want any more people here in Utah. The weather's terrible. There's plenty of dust. Yeah. I mean, we just don't need you. Don't come here. It's
Okay. I promise.
In spite of that, we've had millions of people move here. It's beautiful. I'm joking. For anybody watching this who knows me, I'm joking. So I want to make sure I clarify that. I want to talk about, more than just the residential market here, commercial real estate. We haven't talked about that in a long time. And, I'm talking to my commercial guys in Sacramento and San Diego and primarily West Coast guys. And, they're concerned about obviously coming out of the ground. As you kind of alluded to earlier, it's a lot more difficult now to get a project out of the ground because everything's got to be perfect with that location, the financials, everything that's going into it. So that's definitely having an impact, not only from a market condition standpoint, but a banking issue as well. What concerns do you have and should everyone in commercial real estate have as we speak?
You can start with the impact of the pandemic on office usage. Office vacancy rates about 14%. Office occupancy rates about 49%. So, I mean, you still have, 86% of all office space rented, but less than half of it's being used. Now, there's a lot of movement right now among corporations to try to get people back to work in person at least 2 or 3 days a week. But I think office space is going to be problematic for a while just because the usage rate's so low. So you will see a lot of negotiation around renewed office space and people seeking office space. I do think also that a lot of local commercial business, smaller multifamily, retail and so forth, is funded by small and mid-sized local banks. Mm-hmm. And I think the banking crisis and the tightening of lending standards, when these properties come up for to be renewed, the mortgage gets renewed or refinanced or whatever, it's going to be more difficult and a little bit challenging in some cases. So I'm a little bit cautious on office. I think I'm also cautious on retail. Walking around, going to malls all over the country, high-end malls are doing fine.
Yeah.
Low-end malls, not so much. So you got problems with office, you got problems with malls. Multifamily is pretty well built right now. I think they're going to have a little bit of a slowdown there, maybe some adjustments in some markets on multifamily. So I think the commercial market will be impacted by the tightening lending standards in small and medium-sized banks and also the work-from-home phenomena.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's interesting. You do take a break and get out wherever you're traveling. And the lifestyle centers, what they call them, right? Yeah. They're not malls anymore. They're outdoor. You've got the same retailers in every single one of these lifestyle centers everywhere in the country, give or take, right? And there's the restaurants and all that packed, right? I mean, packed. People want to get out, of course. So, but older malls, of course, that's a no-brainer. They're really struggling. And, what's interesting is you look at the financial side of that industry with Bloomberg reporting, I think, $1.5 trillion of commercial real estate loans coming due. in the next couple of years, by the end of 2025, and you look at higher rates, even slightly higher rates, Pat, you know, even if rates come down a little bit, you know, they're forecasting that values could be up to 40% less than they are now. That is a huge deal.
I think that's over the top in terms of, you know, emphasizing the worst possible scenario. I think there will be impact. I think it will have, I think there will be some adjustments and there will be some losses. I still am not overly alarmed by it, but watching it carefully.
You're always here to reassure us, and that's a good thing. The office thing, too, I thought was interesting because, you know, we both talked to a lot of people around the country, and really what seems to be happening with leases coming up is essentially cutting the footprint by 50%. I hear that from everybody I talk to. Hey, we were at 7,000 feet. Now we're going to 3,500 or 4,000. But the dilemma with that is that it's not a back-to-the-office thing. It's a hybrid deal, as you said. Yep. We're not in the office on Mondays or Fridays or whatever. We're in there to some degree Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. And what I'm hearing from managers is, well, yeah, we cut our footprint in half, but we still got X amount of people we got to jam into 3,500 square feet, right? So it's kind of a dilemma when it comes to that.
Yeah, one man's opinion, I think there will be a multiple year adjustment as we get back to more in-person. I mean, candidly, most industries have a significant amount of OJT because of the uniqueness of the industry or the approach of the particular company.
Yeah.
And OJT only occurs in person or when you have a close contact. So I do think you'll see a gradual but a fairly meaningful return to office. So, but it'll take about 5 to 7 years before we get back to a comfortable place, if you will.
OJT stands for?
On the job training.
Just want to make sure we've got our acronyms out there so everybody knows what we're talking about. But yeah, it's key to collaboration, right? I mean, you bring on new people, and we already have seen this. It's much more difficult to do that if they're not in the office, right?
Absolutely. Hard to train them, and you have mistakes, you have errors, you have problems. So you need to do it.
Well, it's an interesting time, Patrick. Made it through the first quarter, and, you know, looks like there might be some light at the end of the tunnel here. Maybe this summer, you think things are, I mean, what's your feeling? You're always pretty, you've been pretty optimistic through this. What's your feeling here coming into summer?
Yeah, I think it's going to improve. I think the issue we have is that there's been so many changes and so much disruption that people are cautious about changing, and the change will occur slower and people have a lot of anxiety. But I do think you'll see the 30-year fix down around 6 by midsummer. And then below 6 in the fourth quarter. I'm looking next year getting down to around 5 by July of next year. I mean, I'm guessing here a little bit, but I do think it'll happen. And I think that will, so the residential market will be a year and a half from now, the residential market will be very, very good, I think. And we got to get builders back going. There's still, you know, there's one of the problems we have, we underbuilt single family continuously from about 2008. All the way up until now. We were getting close to getting back on track prior to the pandemic, but the pandemic obviously screwed things up a little bit. Builders right now still have a hard time correctly estimating the cost of the home or when it can be finished and put on the market. Now, if you're a builder and you're a large builder and you're going to build 100 or 200 or 1,000 homes, you can't afford to take the risk when you don't know what the cost is going to be or when you can actually put it on the market. So builders are cautious still. We need to get builders back engaged, and we need to really have a fairly significant increase in new home construction over the next 3 to 5 years. We're desperately undersupplied, if you will, with single family. So that happens. I think things will be good. Again, I think the country is in good shape compared to the rest of the world. One of the things, you know, I mean, you've heard me rant about this before. The media doesn't really understand that the globalization already is done. We are in a global economy, and the U.S. is a major player. Now, they say they look at GDP numbers and they say China's almost as big as the U.S. What the U.S. has, and you've heard me rant on this one before, 40% of everything manufactured in the world is manufactured by U.S. companies, and 40% of that is manufactured overseas. A lot of it is manufactured and sold overseas, so we don't get the benefit of shipping products and goods out of country, you know. So our actual impact on the global economy is much larger than it shows in the statistics. And with the excess capital we have that we discussed, a global recession will create tremendous opportunities for us and actually end up benefiting the U.S. economy fairly significantly.
It's It's all good to hear, Patrick. We appreciate your insight and the perspective. That's what's most important here, because everybody gets stuck on the here and now, what they see in the headlines. And I mean, you got to have that perspective. So we appreciate it.
Well, my pleasure, and happy to share thoughts and ideas with you.
Thanks to WFG founder and executive chairman Patrick Stone for joining us. And thank you for partnering with WFG.